welcome to an Hometown Daily News Show. This is episode 144 for May 24th, 2022. I am Mayor Watt. That is Hometown.com. That's what I'm the mayor of. It's a news aggregator. Grabs a bunch of news, throws them into these six categories across the top, and then into sub-channels under there, all of which I hope to bring to Twitch. I say that every episode. If anybody's getting tired of it, let me know. I don't suppose anybody is in chat. I didn't tweet this as any warning. I didn't think that I would be able to do an hour anyway, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to stay longer. There's a lot on my mind regarding news, and it isn't all fun and games, but the news is a broad spectrum of topics as usual, and I add a little bit of context from my particular perspective, and I'm open to discussion. I talk about the merging of business, technology, and society. Sometimes it comes out as a cogent argument, sometimes not. All of that part is opinion where it's opinion and fact where it's fact. And I try to separate where my opinion and where fact actually is. I report what other people are reporting because I consume so much news. I want to have discussions about it with people. I do on the regular, but I don't do it really that much here on Twitch or on YouTube. It's really about me looking to build a community who's interested in a broad spectrum of topics and, rather chill about the conversation. So if you are interested in having a conversation, come over to Hometown on either YouTube or Twitch or Twitter or Discord or pretty much anywhere. I mean, the podcast even exists, but it's almost impossible to have a conversation via the podcast. So definitely come over to twitch.tv/hometown. This is where we can have real-time conversation. That said, let me grab something real quick so that I can make life easier for us. And so now I can see your real-time chat. So I have Chatterino running, and I have the Twitch chat viewable to me via OBS. I've used other streaming stuff, but OBS seems pretty drop-dead simple. So at any rate, let's get into today's news. The very first article is Asus announced world's first 500 NVIDIA G-Sync gaming display. And with the 40X series coming from manufacturers, I'll just say manufacturers, and from NVIDIA, those cards will probably be able to take advantage of this. Says NVIDIA and Asus are announcing the world's first 500 Hertz G-Sync display at Computex 2022 today. While we saw a prototype 500 Hertz earlier this year, Asus is promising shipping of a 24-inch 500 Hertz TN panel. Now, that's designed for esports titles running at 1080. Asus has not yet announced pricing for a release date for the new ROG Swift. Let's click the link. Takes us over to The Verge, and Tom Warren is the author of this. There's a lot of people that might not really care for a 500 Hertz monitor, thinking that 144 Hertz is enough or even 60 Hertz is enough. Well, when you're a gamer and anybody really, you can train yourself to observe more information. And we all do naturally. The more information thrown at us visually, we can eventually train ourselves to observe more. And the more opportunity we have to observe more, the better off we are. Our reaction time is in response to stimuli. So a 500 Hertz screen is providing roughly three times the amount. I hesitate to say four times because 144 is kind of we'd go over the limit of 500 hertz. But anyway, so we would be receiving more information at a faster rate, and therefore we can react faster to the stimulus. Okay, so if you are a professional gamer, the more opportunity you have, the quicker you can react to whatever is going on, particularly in FPS games, first-person shooter games, esports games that require you to have really good Twitch response times, not the streaming platform, but gameplay. And it's almost imperative to get as fast as possible. Otherwise, you will lose when you are playing a game. Either your observation, something else has to give. But if your visual acuity, your ability to respond to that visual stimulation or stimuli is at peak performance, then you'll arguably win the game. It's an interesting take on things if you've never heard of that kind of a situation. But if you do searches on YouTube for does the monitor frequency or refresh rate really matter? You'll see a lot of argument for and some against, but there really is a lot to the idea that you can train yourself to respond faster to more stimuli. And this happens with I've spoken about this before. It relates even to fighter pilots. They actually see some, and not all of them, obviously, but for the most part, most of them, their reaction time is faster because they have trained to respond faster to the stimuli around them. And the same goes for monitors. The faster you see something, the faster you would be able to react to it. And that's what these fast 500 hertz monitors will, represent once they come to the market and people get to test them and see. Now we're talking about nanoseconds of response time. So they will show something on the screen and you'll react to it. And those who are on 500 hertz screens will be able to react faster than 144 hertz, or let alone 600 or 60 hertz. And it's been demonstrated before. So it's a really neat progression. I wouldn't say that it's revolutionary. It's just simply faster. Now, the speed of these things, I just don't know. I mean, the cost of these things, I don't know. And they kind of give an example here on YouTube of the difference between 144 hertz and 500 hertz, the amount of blur that is present. But that's really simulated as to what you see. Again, if you train really well, then you will be able to see that blur as you're playing. Most people have to really exaggerate the motion for it to be really easily present. But on these quality monitors, that blur is not normally present to the everyday gamer. And like I said, right at the beginning, I don't read these articles before the show. I want my reaction and my interaction to be just as authentic as you going over there and reading it for the first time. And I had mentioned right when I clicked on the link that it would definitely relate to the new RTX 40X cards. They're just coming out now that the 30X series cards have lowered in price to the point where I can actually justify buying one. I got a buddy that purchased one for $2,500 or something like that, a 30X card, a 3090 card. And I said, well, you know, the type of money he's making, you can justify it. And but I could never, I mean, even if I wanted to really badly buy a 3090 card for $2,500, I still couldn't. But these 40X cards are going to be phenomenal. And those are the ones that are really going to drive these 500 hertz panels. But it's still at 1080. Some people flinch at that. But let's continue on to the next article. I think any evolutionary, or I wish that we could get revolutionary technology getting dropped, will exert downward pressure on the prices for earlier generation stuff. And 30X cards will be supported for a tremendous amount of time, especially the, you know, anything that's the RTX kind of ray tracing powered video cards. You can still play games, maybe not competitively with the 1080 cards. But anyway, let's continue on. So go over, follow the link in chat and go over to the Verge and read this article if you want to talk more about it. If you already know about that kind of stuff, then feel free to throw something in chat and we can talk more about it. I thought that I was going to have to go in immediately an hour, but I was just notified that I'm not needed in a pressing way. So I may be able to stay and hang out after my podcast. This show is really it's a podcast, but I really want to hang out and chat with people about this tech, business, society combination. At any rate, let's continue on. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel, 10 Things in Tech, Trouble at Google. So I'm just going to click this link because I haven't seen anything really about this. I know of some things that are going on, but I'm not quite sure if this has everything that I have been hearing and reading about. But this is in Business Insider. And let's see, it's written by Hallam Bullock. And it says, today we're looking at complaints from Google Cloud employees who say frustration with senior management is driving VPs to quit. And we're exploring why Airbnb is pulling off all of its listings from mainland China. So Google Cloud employees say frustration with senior management is driving VPs out. Almost 30 company VPs have left Google Cloud since CEO Thomas Kurian took the reins in 2018. But this year is set to be the worst, with 6 VPs already handing in their resignations. Workers told Insider that they're uncomfortable with Google Cloud's recent moves, which include revamping employees' comp plans and laying off dozens of support staff. As if you can... As if you can lay off support staff. You really need to keep... we have a problem in that the margins that exist in tech services, right? Software as a service, or pretty much anything where you can automate it, is that when you really do need a human being, there isn't enough human beings. And I've had it where... So I launched a channel over on YouTube, and they, at least for people like me who don't have a following, you don't get any human interaction. And it took 6 months for them to return the channel that was erroneously shut down. In fact, I still have the email that says this channel should never have been turned off. You've done nothing wrong. Yet it took me, I think, 5 emails and close to 6 months for somebody to ultimately respond to my inquiries. And so, like, I was told that it was shut down, and then I wrote an email and it was dismissed. And then I wrote another email to somebody else and it was dismissed. And then I sent another email, and that was to somebody else, so a third person. And that was dismissed, and then a 4th email. And I couldn't just keep on berating people, like, hey, you know, one after the other, it would have gotten me banned across the board. But ultimately they reactivated my account, but by that time the damage had already been done. But in this kind of situation, it's even a step further because it involves so much other tech instead of just some, you know, seemingly nobody, at least to other people, I'm a nobody. You know, nobody streamer, it's not a big deal. But with this, Google Cloud and so many services are attached to it, getting rid of support staff is just bizarre to me. It shouldn't happen. But it's all about keeping that margin high and concentrating the revenue into a much fewer, while claiming that it's good for business. But really what it does is it turns a whole lot of people off, and then they'll end up going somewhere else, wherever somewhere else might be, you know, smaller time cloud service providers or over to AWS or wherever else. And there's really only two dogs on the block. It's Google Cloud and AWS, and Microsoft, I think, uses AWS. But at any rate. And then they go into other things on this article. So Airbnb is pulling out of mainland China. I might have that in the news feed, but I might have just moved on. Anyway, if you want to read more about this thing, it's 10 things in tech, and they start out with trouble at Google Cloud. I'm going to continue on to the next article, otherwise I will be here for 3 hours. And the next article is Logitech's MX Keys Mechanical is a satisfying wireless introduction to Mech Keys. So mechanical keyboards are the ones that have kind of that clicky sound to them. Not all of them have that clicky sound. You can have silenced keys. But mechanical keys are very robust, and you can customize them. And they're responsive more than what I started out with. One of my very first computers had a membrane keyboard. And so you couldn't really feel it click, click, right? It was just like a squish. Many laptops have that kind of squish, but it's so much more reassuring to have a mechanical keyboard that the way that you interact, it's much better in terms of when you're typing, you have confirmation of the keystrokes. So when you type like I do, I'm somewhere around 120 words a minute. Nowadays, my peak was closer to 150. And I loved mechanical keyboards. Nowadays, mechanical keyboards are all these like, you know, smaller ones. And without getting into the reads about what they are, I'm not a big fan of the current trend in keyboards in general, which is moving away from ergonomic, moving away from split keyboards. We really need to go back to split keyboards. But let's, well, I don't know if I can. There we go. Let's go over to the source of this article, which is arstechnica.com. And the article is by Sharon Harding. So as you can see, these are the two mini, which is the top one, and then a standard keyboard down there with the directional keys and the 10 key. And they're somewhere around $150. So the mini is $150, and the standard, arguably standard, is $170, which isn't really bad for a mechanical keyboard. And name brand might have the name brand, well, may have higher quality. But again, those keyboards, those straight keyboards, are horrible for your ergonomics, because you break your wrist 90 degrees, well, 45 degrees, right? So you really need to split. You need to have a split keyboard so that it's facing like this, and even tented so it's at an angle like that, so that you can type more naturally to your skeleton, to your kinetics, to your ergonomics. And you get the right seating, you get the right height desk, you get the split keyboard, and you'll be able to type longer. You won't suffer from carpal tunnel syndrome, or repetitive strain injury, RSI, which is pretty much the same thing. But it can cause tingling, numbness, pain, and it's not good for anybody. But we still haven't learned our lessons, so eventually the market will catch up. It's just really expensive because you need two different molds for the left and right half of a keyboard, unless you kind of force it into identical shape, which is doable. But it just doesn't happen, and it's twice as much work, apparently. But custom split keyboards that are mechanical are hundreds of dollars. Sometimes the most I've ever heard of is something like a $2,500 keyboard that was custom everything. But I would rather spend $250 on a keyboard that is mechanical, that is split, that I can tent. And if a switch goes bad, you just yank it out and put a new switch in and go on. You know, you buy new keycaps. If it has wireless or wired, you know, it doesn't really matter. But at any rate, this is all about the Logitech MX Keys mechanical keyboard. It looks like they're brown switches. So depending on the color of the switch, it has different sound and it has different weight. So there are certain actuation zones and how much force is needed to drive the key down and how fast it will return, what pressure it will return. And you can change a lot of this kind of stuff inside, and you can change like lubrication and other elements within it. So once you're into mechanical keys, you may never leave. I think I've got like six of them. They're not in my office anymore. And I stick to one split keyboard now because I can't like the RTX cards wildly outstripping my desire to spend money. Mechanical keyboards that are split are really expensive. And so I stick to one brand, and that's Mistel, Mistel. They have a great split keyboard. It doesn't sound like some of the ones that I really love, but they do the job, and they function perfectly for me. So go and check those out. And there's red, there's blue, and you basically just choose what switch you want, and if you want it really loud, and if you need more force so that it is more responsive to your particular behavior. But these switches with that little ring around them is different than all other mechanical keyboards that I have ever purchased. So I think those are the Kale Key switches. Yeah. Hold on. Well, I'll just move on. We can come back to this if we need to. Anyway, the next article is over in the Mobile channel. A Florida student suing over Don't Say Gay uses curly hair as commitment speech code. An openly gay Florida high schooler who is among those suing over the state's Don't Say Gay bill had a graduation speech. So let's click the link. It takes us over to The Hill. And Sarah Paulus is the article writer. And I'm just going to pause this. If you want to watch the video, you can go over to the video. But it says here, while using a winking code to avoid referring to his orientation directly, they said, "I must discuss a very public part of my identity. This characteristic has probably become the first thing you think of when you think of me as a human being. As you know, I have curly hair." And to me, anything that has to refer to this bill about Don't Say Gay is, because it's inherent in the government, it is a violation of First Amendment. I don't know how it could possibly come into existence that you're not allowed to discuss it in the classroom. You're not allowed to discuss it in public policy. You're not allowed to discuss it. And it is absurd that it actually exists. But that is getting into things that are disturbing me well beyond just this one article, with statements that have been made by the U.S. Supreme Court just in the last 24 hours. I can't really get into it right now, only because I'll end up going down a road. And I don't know, maybe the show has become a little bit so society charged. I have a certain dog in this hunt in that I am looking for greater equality across the board for everybody. And like others have said in their shows, but not everybody. See, that's the thing. I'm going to end up going down a road that I don't want to, unless there's more people that are willing to talk. Come to the Twitch show when I start broadcasting more. And obviously, I'm ruining it by bouncing around the hours. I apologize profusely. I can't lock down the time yet because I thought that I was going to have this last 2 weeks to do my show and stay on the air for longer periods. And I even started talking about it. but then as mayor, I have a million bosses. And sure enough, they came knocking on my door. Well, at any rate, this, and I'll just refer to it as, I think that there is an effort to balkanize the United States into a bunch of state factions arguing about their own flavor of pie instead of everybody working on making the pie better overall. And because each state is cosmopolitan in nature, the way that that flavor is being built is by the most vociferous, siloed, closed-minded, vitriolic, and openly oppressive, bordering on fascist population. And ultimately in the minority, because society really is social, and all of the other people, all of these social animals are saying to everybody, you can be and do whatever and whoever you want to be and do, but your rights end where my rights begin. That seems to be ignored. But only in one direction. Truly, only in one direction. And I'm happy to discuss it more if anybody wants to talk about it. Again, come to my show here on Twitch. I'm going to start announcing it well in advance. And then 30 minutes before I start the show, I will activate the channel and we can all start talking about it. But come on board and talk. Again, though, just be civil. Let's continue on, only because there is more to this. They talk about the rest of the speech, but the crux of this is that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in late March signed into law the controversial Don't Say Gay bill, which limits discussion of sexuality and sexual orientation in classrooms. But it extends well beyond that. Because if you don't allow it to be discussed in the classroom, where do you allow it to be discussed? Because in the classroom is where intellectual curiosity takes place, takes hold. Outside the classroom, if you bring it up and somebody doesn't like you, there is no safe place. Students can't talk about it at home because their parents aren't open or honest, and they're not willing to discuss it or even allow anybody to talk about it. Out in public, you talk about it, and unless you are in an echo chamber, nobody's going to embrace your discussion. It can be met with hostile actions and violence. This has a history of happening in the United States and elsewhere. And so if not within the safe place of education, where can you talk about this stuff? You can't, right? Because the people that don't want anybody talking about this want to silo it, want to balkanize, want to oppress, want to stop what is naturally occurring. It is a state of existence, you know? Regardless of what you want, nature doesn't care about your opinion. We are who we are. whatever we are. We have a few people that, and it is a select few people, that want to change the natural dynamic. And they reach back into 13th century mechanics of society to espouse that view, or further back, you know. But like I've mentioned in another episode, there is references to other things that are conveniently discounted when talked about in history. But again, we'll have to end up talking about this. Let's continue on. I will end up going down the rabbit hole eventually. So let's talk about other things and keep moving this boat forward. The next article is in the Stock Marketeers channel. It's about business, but it's really about personal finance. And if you're either bordering on retirement or in retirement or planning your retirement, you're being practical, you're being real, you're understanding that while you might be calling me, oh, it's the old dude on Twitch or on YouTube or in the podcast, the reality is you will be where I am if you're not already there. And so you better start paying attention to it. Otherwise, you'll be worse off than me unless you are with a silver spoon in your mouth right now. So forget pickleball and golf. These communities centered around farms or gardens are redefining retirement. There are places in America where octogenarians can help kids with their homework, and residents of all ages can eat meals together and care for one another. So you can click this link. It takes us over to MarketWatch. And, there was an article about Wendy's. I was just talking about Wendy's with somebody maybe 3 days ago, and ta-da, I guess their stock is surging. I wasn't paying any attention. Let's see here. It's a warm spring Monday in East Hampton, Massachusetts, and from the front porch of her townhome in the Treehouse Intergenerational Community, Sue Brow can see several neighbors' well-kept gardens in bloom. Help plant garden of one of the neighbors who was ill. She's pitching in to grow tomatoes on another neighbor's patio. Later in the afternoon, residents gather to play games in a communal building. And their 16-year-old son, Brow's 16-year-old son, helps take out the older neighbor's trash. So basically, it's a retirement community that allows younger folks. Right? Indeed, the intergenerational communities popping up across America are among the best new ideas in retirement. You know, you might refer to that as just living in a community, but I guess this is actually like a planned community, which I haven't really dug into. They're referring to it as Agrihood, designed around an urban farm in Santa Clara, California, and 4300 San Pablo in Emeryville, California community, designed for seniors and young adults who are aging out of their foster care system. Interesting. Well, if you're interested in this kind of stuff, just keeping aware of what's going on, this seems like it's more like a village, and that's how they refer to it in this picture here. It's the 60-home treehouse intergenerational community in East Hampton, Massachusetts, is both a village and a social project. There's good and bad with something referred to as a project. It smacks as an experiment, and you don't want the experiment to fail. But I'm all for kind of a village type of situation, particularly nowadays with food costs going up through the roof, cost of living increasing, CPI increasing, right? the idea of having a village, and the village is self-contained. You got the food, you've got businesses, you've got solutions for everybody. Pardon me one second. You have solutions for everything so that you are a close-knit community. The only thing about it is when you have villages that are isolated, they aren't as social as other villages, and not villages, but communities with higher population densities. And so it becomes kind of an echo chamber of ideological bents and not necessarily open to newcomers. And it can pose other societal problems in and of itself. But we have this kind of community elsewhere. It's just not as modern as this might be. But if you want to know more about it, go over, follow the link that's in the show notes. Let's continue on. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. And this person says that they spend $400 a month on freelancers for their small business. And they describe who they hire and why it's worth the extra cost. I'm just going to click the link and take us over there without getting onto a soapbox. And this article is over at businessinsider.com by Jen Glantz. And so Jen Glantz is an entrepreneur and founder of Bridesmaid for Hire. And she budgets $400 for freelancers per month. And the expense is worth it. So let's see. So they hire researchers, Google Ad specialists, personal assistants, and I suppose probably more like minutia kind of things, that tactical strikes on what they need done. I do the same thing through various sites. They mentioned two of them right here, Fiverr and Upwork, but if your opportunity costs make it so that it's economically sound to spend $400, then so be it. Spend $400. If you know that you're going to pay for that and make more juice on the other side of it, who cares how much you spend? Because you're, not only are you stimulating the economy and giving somebody an opportunity to generate revenue for their way of life, you are allowing you to focus on something else. And that's really what opportunity cost is in business. You want to make sure that whatever it is you're doing isn't just costing you money, but it's leading to it being profitable for you to be an ongoing concern. Researchers is one thing. Google ad specialists, you don't necessarily want to be babysitting your ads. Some people really like to manage, micromanage that, but not me. And personal assistants, they go out and they do all of the work while you are doing something else, prepping for a presentation, or you are meeting with somebody to strike up a deal, or you're out selling your service, your business, or running the company itself. And so, and that's kind of what some people would do with me. They would hire me as a strategic management consultant to come in, look at their enterprise, see what they're good at, see what they're failing at, see if the boat has leaks and plug them and provide guidance as to how to either pivot or recover from whatever is failing, and or provide a new product or service that I might have in my quiver for the company to bring to market or to deploy internally or whatever it might be. So there are a lot of people out there that can facilitate making your business better. And if it costs $400 a month, again, as long as you have success on the other side in mind, it may very well be worth it. If you want to read more about their particular context, go over to Business Insider. And context matters so much that it's never just a cookie cutter solution. Even when you find a solution that you think is perfect, it's still not cookie cutter. There's always some fidelity there that needs to be tweaked. So let's go on. This is in The Order of the Bean, which is a show about coffee. I don't have any idea what I'm about to click on, but it's titled, Could This Herb Also Beat Coffee? And it says, let Alexis Nicole, I guess. I think that's their last name. I think it's spelled, I mean, it's spelled Nikole. I don't think it's Ole. So Nicole, take you foraging for the next coffee alternative. So I'm going to click that link and take us over to sprudge.com. And it's an article written by who? Zach Cadwallader. Over at Sprudge, I think Zach is the one person that I aggregate news from the most, it seems. Every time, maybe they're the only person over there, which means that they're very hardworking. So go over to sprudge.com and check out the article. But I'm going to, it says, after drinking so much coffee in a day, day in, day out, one can't help but wonder what else could be coffee. How about peach or even cherry seeds? They're all droops like coffee. So could we brew up some of those? Luckily, for those of us with coffee-colored lenses, there is Alexis Nicole Nelson, better known as Black Forager on Instagram and Alexis Nicole on TikTok. In her latest video, Nelson goes foraging in her backyard and finds a lightly caffeinated alternative to coffee, and it's making me wonder what else they could brew up. Cleaver? Okay, I've never even heard of that, but obviously you don't know what you don't know, and so maybe we can take a look at it. Really don't want to spend too much time on any one particular article, and if you've never seen this show before, basically what it amounts to is I go through about 20 articles very lightly. I talk about it from the perspective of business, technology, and society merged together. And it's all news that's aggregated over at ohmtown.com. That's my site. I've been using it in my business and professional life for probably 10 years now. And then I opened it up to the public here in on the first of the year, after so long, showing it to some people, and they said, just open it up. And so there you go. Go over to ohmtown.com. But it aggregated this, and I can't imagine going out into your backyard and just grabbing some stuff and throwing it into your coffee maker to see if you can brew up something unique. So known scientifically as gallium aperine, and is part of the Rubaceae family, which Nelson notes that coffee is also a part of. Well, hey, that's great. I guess it's coffee adjacent. An herb, cleaver is believed to have in Southwest Asia, but is now considered a native species in Europe, Asia, and North America. So, yeah, everywhere. But you don't make coffee with the entire plant. In the video, Nelson uses the seeds of the cleaver, the little pom-poms that are barely caffeinated. Nelson states, I don't like their fuzzy. And I don't know what that is. It says add. And maybe it's a typo. And I don't like that they're in pairs, she sings. After gathering enough for a brew, Nelson roasts the cleaver seeds in a pan until they smell a little like coffee. Then after grinding them with a mortar and pestle, Nelson brews them using a sieve. Okay. So let's see, smells like instant coffee, tastes cozy at the same, in the same coffee that coffee does. Okay, I guess in the same vein that coffee does. And, but without all the bitterness. Interesting. Final verdict, it is something that she is definitely going to be trying again. I'll have to look into it and see if there is there more? It's just an ad at the end of this, but interesting that somebody would just do that. I've actually been... I've been with a group of people that have done distilling with random stuff and referred to it as bog water. And everybody had a sip of it, and I didn't want to go blind. So I just did barely a little sip of it. But I guess this is a tamer version of that, because it's just grinding up something that you find in your backyard that is coffee adjacent. Interesting. Might have to give it a try. Let's go on to the next article. The next article is in the Stock Marketeers channel. The Wall Street Journal writes, shale drillers are pumping out dividends instead of more oil and gas. Shale drillers have been hamstrung by pipeline constraints, rising prices for oil field supplies, and shortages of roughnecks and rigs. Let's click the link. It takes us over to MarketWatch. And this article is written by Ryan December and Matt Grossman, I guess. I don't know if it's two separate people or if it's one really long name. And they don't have links. So let's just assume that it's two different people. Compensation plans that once paid executives to boost output without regard to energy prices now foster cost cuts and shareholder returns. And this kind of speaks to stuff that I've been talking about for the last, I'd probably say 3 months. I've watched it, and then I started talking about it more and more. And I think that I have a problem with the idea that costs are rising to the consumer and costs are supposedly rising to the oil and gas companies. They're really the ones that are pulling it out of the ground, though, or they're buying it from overseas. But the gas is being made by domestic companies. And in the process of this, they are keeping their margins massive and ending up with record profits. At the same time, they're complaining about the high cost of the goods, the raw materials, the oil, and they're kind of screwing over all of the consumers, right? But we suffer from this thing called price elasticity of demand. So we will eventually have to spend money getting gas, regardless of its cost. $6 a gallon in California, in other places around the world, it's even higher when you equalize everything. But the reality is these oil and gas companies are making massive profits, even though they're complaining that their costs are higher. So who's really footing the bill for all of this? Their margins are still high. So they're not absorbing any of it. And indeed, they're charging more, outstripping the ratio that would have normally been the price at the pump. Okay, so we as consumers are paying more than what would normally have been charged to us because they want to keep their margins even higher. Because if everything was the same and they were just keeping their costs to manufacturing ratio the same, right? That the cost at the pump and the cost to produce, right? Cost of goods sold, the ratio is no longer the same. They are now making all of their money back because they've been in a slump for 2 years because of the pandemic. So it's really predatory pricing, but a lot of people are making a metric ton of money, and we are in an inflationary trend heading towards recession, and gas is the leading indicator for this. And you can actually see that the cost of gas and the cost of wheat are in a direct correlation to one another and isn't the sole reason, but I am saying that gas is the reason why, not wheat, but gas is the reason wheat is going up. And because gas is going up, everything else is going up because everybody wants to keep their margins the same, even though we're all suffering the same. But there's a lot of cash out there, right? That's why we have inflation now too. Well, it's all going up to the top, even though the top has been bailed out by governments again and again and again. So we have a real problem here, and it isn't the middle class. It isn't the lower class, because we're all falling down into the lower class with 800 billionaires, 300 of which were created during the pandemic because of predatory pricing. So that in mind, I have this here, you know, executives at firms, including Pioneer Natural Resources, which is very invested in by, what is his name? My brain just went blank. Yeah, hold on 1 second. Let me Warren Buffett. So, Berkshire Hathaway. Yeah, that's it. So I had to do a quick search because my brain went blank. But at any rate, the idea here is all of this is extremely predatory, and we have mergers and acquisitions, concentration of wealth. Only a few people are deciding the fate of so much, and those the people that invest in these companies, ultimately they're making short-term gains on something that's going to have long-term impact. So we'll have to monitor this, we'll have to watch this, and I've gotten into countless discussions regarding this with so many people saying I don't really care as long as I make money. But the problem is you can't keep having record profits. You can't keep rising prices, making prices rise, because at some point it's untenable to keep that going. And then we have a crash, and it's a massive crash because you can't keep it going. And then it trickles back up again, and then we have a massive crash. But one thing holds true. All of the wealth rises up into the billionaire class because they own so much. Meanwhile, we are struggling down on the floor where they're sitting at the table. And that's really how it is. The working class has to form a union to defend itself against the rather exploitive nature of employment. I mean, I've even been told, well, that person was paid, so essentially you can abuse them, and I just won't stand for that. So it is the nature of employment, it seems, with a large swath of employers. That said, this is a really convoluted thing. And I end up going down these like side channels of discussion. Happy to talk about it more, but instead of giving this money to the workers, it's dividends to investors, the people with the means to already survive inflation for the most part. You know, you can't spend thousands of dollars on stock without already being pretty darn secure in your finances. Meanwhile, the margin between that the class that can invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in stock alone is distancing itself from the workers. Well, what are you going to do when workers can't even show up anymore? You can't drive to work. You can't get food on your plate. You're going to have a very upset working class, all because they've been marginalized for short-term gains at the cost of their hard work. So, but let's continue. You know, I'll end up, like I've been saying pretty much every time I post something in chat, going to end up going down a rabbit hole, and I don't want to do that today, tonight. Okay, so this next article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel. Facebook parent Meta erases $42 billion in market value after Snap warning rips social media stocks. So Snap's second quarter earnings warning rippled through a number of social media and digital advertising stocks as investors grow increasingly worried about a slowdown in the economy and the sale of consumer goods. I'm not so sure. I think it's mostly people have more options available and they're not going through only certain channels. The real problem here is supply chain management. More than a decade ago, I referred to the returning of domestic manufacturing as repatria sourcing. kind of a play on bringing back production into the United States. It will raise the cost of items pretty considerably depending on what it is that we're buying. But this here is referring to a particular set of facts. So this is in the businessinsider.com site, and it's by Matthew Fox. And it says, Facebook parent Meta Platforms fell 10% on Tuesday, erasing $53 billion in market value. The decline came after Snap warned about its second quarter results due to a tough macro environment, which is everything. Investors are extrapolating Snap's weakness onto other social media and digital advertising stocks. This, by the way, is the reason why Meta came into existence, and it was to break off all of the pieces from Facebook. Facebook was the original owner of all of these companies, but like Google created Alphabet, Facebook created Meta, so that if there's any impactor on one thing, it doesn't destroy the real parent. And in this case, Facebook can fail and decline or decline. Snap can fail or decline. Instagram can fail or decline. And so this is basically just one little event. Shares of Snap plunged more than 40%, while Pinterest, Alphabet, Twitter fell 27, 8, and 4, respectively. Pinterest, though, to me, is very niche. One of the things that I really don't like is that Pinterest pops up in my search results quite a bit as a primary result. And I've never understood why, because I never go to Pinterest. Alphabet is the parent for what amount? It's basically Google, but it's the parent for a bunch of other companies. And Twitter is all by itself. Twitter is taking a beating because of the machinations with Elon Musk. I thought that I wasn't going to end up talking about him, but here we are. So Twitter's decline has already kind of been in progress because of, really, there's some significant risk here about what is going to happen. But these websites, these services, it's really not an issue. It just happens to be that one took a beating because it didn't meet its metric, and then the rest have always been, to some degree, questionable, like Pinterest, right? Declining 27%. It's because there isn't that much interest. There's a whole lot of things going on with it, but I don't think that there's much interest in it. But let's go on to the next article, and happy to talk more about it if you are interested in it. Just let me know in chat, throw a message in there and say, hey, I want to talk about this or I want to talk about that. Happy to do it if you are in my chat. I don't know who all is in there. Again, I have said it every episode for the last four episodes that Twitter says that there's 12 people in chat, or sometimes at one point there were something like 100 people in my chat, but there were ultimately only like two. So if you are here and you've never been here before, be sure to follow, and you'll be notified when I do another show. And I do a show every day. I try to do it at 11 o'clock, but as mayor, like I said at the beginning of the show, I have 1,000 bosses. So this next article is in the Mobile Channel, clearer than ever that America must invest in truth. And this article is over at thehill.com. Russia's unprovoked attack on the innocent people of Ukraine has finally focused international attention on the dangers of Vladimir Putin's ambitions. Now, as it becomes clear that the fastest way to end this disastrous loss of life is to put pressure on Putin from within, piercing the Kremlin's information blackout is more important than ever. There was a huge leak of photos from China, apparently, and the rather oppressive processing. I mean, it's almost, we'll end up, it's twisted. I mean, the Uyghurs or Uyghurs, I'm not quite sure anymore because I've heard it in different ways how to say the name, but they're rather oppressed. And we have that going on in China and everybody's ignoring it. And then we have Russia invading Ukraine without any real rationale behind it. Arguably, it's nobody else's business, right? That, I mean, that's what all of the, well, not all, that's what many Americans were saying about us in invading Afghanistan and Iraq, and rolling into Pakistan and you know, doing a tactical strike that eliminated a known terrorist. But I always say, you know, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter. It really depends on which side of the fence you're on to name who is and who isn't, right? And then there are people that are rather holistic in trying to understand all of the machinations that have led to the way that things are. And it turns out that there's a whole lot of bad people out there. Now, I'm not trying to make excuses or anything, really. I'm just stating the facts there, historical facts there. And then, you know, here we have Russia invading Ukraine, and it's destroying the breadbasket of the region and the world. You know, they are a major exporter of wheat. And the moment that this war went underway and it started destroying the crops and the supply chain, and the countries around it are now suffering greatly, and costs are going through the roof, and fuel is being turned off, and it, you know, we're in the 21st century. We should be exploiting technology to make everybody's life better instead of trying to invade another country for whatever reason. This has no reason, no rationale to it other than to put the band back together. But here in the States, we have our own issues, which, you know, we can talk about it. If you have questions or you have comments, throw it in chat. Let me know what you're thinking. If you have questions, go for it. Let's talk about it. For much of the last several decades, the United States and European partners failed to take the threat of Putin's domestic propaganda seriously. Cold War institutions like Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, which they lead, apparently, this author does, were seen as, at best, anachronistic and, at worst, no longer necessary. Well, this is in The Hill, an article by Jamie Fly, an opinion contributor. And I always say this because they say it at The Hill. The views expressed by contributors are their own and not the view of The Hill, and it's certainly not my opinion. And the article goes into it. Instead of bolstering support for independent media outlets and closed or closing societies, many leaders in democratic societies begin to focus on their attacks on the media in their own countries. Yes, true. You can see that happening all the time. In fact, here in the States, you have a polarity where there are a select few media owners, entire owners. Well, I should say owner, a select few owners owning massive swaths of media. And in unison, there is messaging, and where there is the messaging on one side is close the door, shut it down, isolate. And the other is open, inclusion, equity, opportunity, etc. And then the refrain on the other side is no, shut it all down and limit who has options, who has equity, who has inclusion, who has opportunity. And that is really where you have to pick a side. And well, that's just not how society works. You're going to end up just getting vitriolic and angry, and it becomes them versus us instead of, again, like I said in about the last article, utilizing technology to make all of us better. But that doesn't seem to happen. You know, Putin has actually been denying certain things and saying certain things, and somewhat, controlling the media so they only see what he is feeding them. And then when these soldiers apparently are going out into battle, they're breaking free of the controls and seeing what's really going on. And they're like, oh my God, this is really wildly different than what is being told to us. And this is all because the marketing engine is controlled by a select few. And that is what's happening here in the States too. We're ending up with only a select few people controlling the messaging. We used to have rules against it, but now not so much. Now not at all. In fact, I think freedom of speech is leveraged to pry open those controls, and good luck trying to claw it back. The next article is over in the Mobile Channel. Silicon Valley's worship of work hurts us all, or all of us. This is an article over at New York Times. It's a guest essay, so it tends to, these last two articles are opinion. But even if you don't agree with it, there are elements within it that you probably do agree. I agree with something in this, I'm sure. My main thing about this, they're referring to it, when your job fills in for your faith, that's a problem. The actual article's title was originally Work, Religion, Silicon Valley. And it says there that the title was originally Silicon Valley's Worship of Work Hurts Us All, or All of Us, sorry. This is an article by Carolyn Chen. Dr. Chen is an associate professor of ethnic studies at the University of California, Berkeley, and a co-director of the Berkeley Center for the Study of Religion. So now I don't necessarily agree with any of this, but I want to challenge preconceived notions about somebody's take on something. So you could have judged that title by its cover and then read all of this and agreed with little points of it and not necessarily the whole of it. And that would basically be me. I don't want to stop anybody from practicing their religion. I don't want to stop anybody from working hard. It says here, plenty of writers have argued in recent years that work has become a false idol, with the office, not church, the place where many Americans now seek out meaning and purpose. As a sociologist of religion, okay, I think these writers are right. Work is replacing and in some cases even taking the form of religion among many of America's professionals. So right out of the gate, they're picking a side and they're espousing a particular view. I don't agree with it. I think that people who are working are trying to survive. If they had anything else to do, they would probably do it. Humans are notoriously lazy. We find ways to make ourselves so efficient that we can just have our personal time, that we take shortcuts. You know, we will cut the corner of a 90-degree angle so that we can get around that turn faster. That's how it works. You can go and practice your religion wherever you want and whatever you want, as long as you aren't harming or oppressing other people in the process of it. That's my take on it. But it says here, between 2013 and 2018, they conducted over 100 interviews for their book, Work, Pray, Code, most of them were with tech workers based in Silicon Valley, people who told them over and over that their careers are spiritual journeys and their work a calling. Somehow, I don't really think that that's how it is said. I have worked with, 100 interviews. That's nothing. That is so anecdotal that it's laughable to be the foundation for anything. Nobody refers to their work unless they are a spiritual person doing spiritual things, that their work is a spiritual journey. They may say that it's their calling because they are dedicated to the work, whatever it might be. And I'm willing to suggest that when somebody's referring to their work as a calling, it's because it has a social element to it. Because that's the kind of term that is used for a societal context. You know, most people aren't going to talk about riding or making a bike as a calling or a spiritual journey. I don't buy this. But you can continue to read on about this. And the reason why I bring it up is because I want to challenge preconceived notions about what is going on in the world. You can't just discount it because of the context of this. You need to read it, inform your own opinion about it, and know that society is broader than the silo that we might exist in or that we put up. And so I am more than willing to talk with someone who has written all of this and find out, you know, why lean so hard into this? Because religion is personal. It has nothing to do with business unless you stick that in business. It has nothing to do with the day-to-day operation of your existence unless you choose to stick that in your day-to-day existence. And not everybody has to, needs to, wants to, or cares to. In fact, I think it's called, let me see real quick. Let me see if I can. Apatheist. That's what it's called. Apatheist. It's a person who just doesn't care about confirming or denying religion in any way, shape, or form. Right? Maybe that's what most people are. So if we want to have a discussion about it, we can continue a discussion about it. That's why I'm here. So let's continue on with the next article, because there isn't really much more to it than in that other article. You can go and read it yourself. This next article is Y Combinator, which has been around for, 15 years, something like that. Y Combinator warns startup founders that things don't look good in the economy right now and shares 8 tips to survive a downturn. In a previous episode, I provided a link to a whole bunch of pitch decks that if you're an entrepreneur, if you're interested in hanging your own shingle, being your own boss, maybe seek startup funding, angel investors, and whatnot. You can go and check that out. You'll have to go through some videos and find the show notes. I don't remember what episode it is. But if you're interested in business, I would like to have discussions with people on the weekend about business. That actually is one of the two segments of specialty of mine. So that's what I went to school for, that one of the reasons for school that I have multiple. Anyway, that I won't get into it. But at any rate, talking about business with people who are considering it or are in it and they're looking for guidance, but I will shy away from the fiscal side of things. There are rules, regulations regarding financial advising. Business I'm qualified for because of what I do and my education. But financial advising is slightly different. At any rate, Y Combinator is for startups. But they have other things that go on. And it says, Y Combinator told startup founders that things don't look good in public markets right now. The California-based startup incubator gave them 8 things to do in a downturn. Maybe it's dig a hole, put your money in it. Among them, to play it safe, plan for the worst, and just stay alive. And that's all about runway. So let's click the link. It'll take us over to Business Insider and Katie Canales, I guess, is her last name. Yeah, it's a. They've got a picture of a bull and a unicorn, Sam. Interesting choices. So let's scroll down and see if there's something interesting here. In an email sent to company founders, Y Combinator, which has birthed the likes of Airbnb, Coinbase, Stripe. There's been a lot that have come out of Y Combinator. I guess those three are the biggest? I don't know why they chose this. Said a large number of its portfolio companies have reached out for advice on how to react to the current economic climate and stuttering stock values. If you've looked at the stock market, man, it is swinging up and down. Frequency of a cheap ham radio, just like oil prices, just like gas prices, just like wheat prices. But again, I think that if you pay attention to gas prices, that is the leading indicator for upcoming price threats across the board. But we don't have enough fidelity, so there needs to be higher resolution in what the price trending is. Mine is more on the macro side, but there's some due diligence that we could probably do to find out if it precedes a lot of other activities in other areas of the market. What we told them is the economic downturns often become huge opportunities for the founders who quickly change their mindset, plan ahead, and make sure their company survives. Yeah. So plan for the worst, consider accepting more funds. With every acceptance of funds, you delete your ownership control potentially. Money or not, the onus falls on you. Yep, you have to be situationally aware. You have to know exactly where your business is. And if you haven't planned for a downturn, basically you're possibly entirely screwed. Optics could influence VC investments. Yeah, if you come across like you don't know what's going on, VCs won't invest. So, like I used to go and do pitches and stuff when I was in the startup world, and I was young, really young. And so I was approached at one point and told, there isn't enough gray in your C-suite. And mainly it's because it was two 18-year-olds. And so the whole VC, the optics were that we didn't have enough experience. Doesn't necessarily turn out to be true, but it would with most, I'm sure. Says reevaluate what you think is normal in the fundraising world. No more cash until you hit product market fit. So it says if you're post Series A and pre-product market fit, don't expect another round to happen at all until you have obviously hit product market fit. The Series A milestones that they publish might even turn out to be a bit too low. So there's like a bunch of information that's over at Y Combinator that you can go and check out. If you're planning on raising money soon, don't. Yeah, you might want to stay lean. And either you stay lean and you don't accept more money, or you accept more money and dilute your ownership. That's just the nature of the beast. Not all of us are Zuckerberg, who was so well connected and didn't have any need for money already that he could lean, and it was perfect timing to start up Facebook, or I should say, well, anyway, I'll just leave it alone. And then their number eight thing is just stay alive, which is kind of like your doctor saying, stay, get healthy, and then that's it. Remember that many of your competitors will not plan well, maintain high burn. There you go. That's your runway, your burn rate, and only figure out they are screwed when they try to raise their next round. You can often pick up significant market share in an economic downturn just by staying alive. And that's attrition. So if you can survive a market downturn because you've planned adequately, there will be something on the other side, because people will start spending on your particular enterprise if you have a product or service that is of value. Meanwhile, they'll still pay for whatever you have now. It just might be a little leaner. That said, let's go on to the next article. This is Take Two and Zynga merge in the biggest deal in gaming history. $12.7 billion. Take Two and Zynga have merged in what, for the moment, is the biggest corporate deal in gaming history. The stockholders of each company approved all proposals last Thursday, and shares of Zynga ceased trading after market close on Friday. Yesterday, Zynga shareholders received $3.50 and 0.0406 Take-Two shares. So, a little bit. For every share in Zynga, adding up to an enormous $12.7 billion. So the money involved is eye-watering, though, according to the author, not me. This is all from the author. Take-Two's most famous asset is Grand Theft Auto franchise, but it also owns the likes of NBA 2K, WWE games, BioShock, Borderlands, Civilization. Huge. Huge deal, huh? So did anybody in my chat have stock? I didn't. This is an article over at PC Gamer written by Rich Stanton. And they have a Borderlands-esque image on it. So until Microsoft buys Activision Blizzard, at least. There you go. Well, that's not really a gaming deal so much as just a massive acquisition by Microsoft. Microsoft, I don't know. They got into that game, so to speak, simply because it was there and they had enough money that they could, you know, just buy it. And you see this sometimes when there's so much money in the system that somebody can just kind of move in and buy something and suddenly they're the boss and you have to pay attention to them. I would prefer more competition. More competition breeds bigger and bigger and better products and benefit for the consumer. And I think every market is the same way. When there's more competition, you get better service, better products on the other side. I really don't like mergers, but sometimes people just want to get the hell out of Dodge, make their money, and go rest on their island. So is there more to this? Yep. You can go over to PC Gamer and watch the video and read the rest of the article. They always have really cool articles, and it leads to more stuff. So once you end up over at PCGamer.com, you may not come out for a while. Hey, Brildine, how are you? Sorry, one second. Let's continue on to the next. One second. Yeah, I think that's Microsoft. Sorry for the dead air. You kind of made me question, and so I had to do a quick search. So Brildane in chat says apparently Ubisoft. There's actually a video from Ubisoft about how to pronounce Ubisoft, and everything is fine. You think that everything is fine, that it's Ubisoft, and then somebody goes, well, Ubisoft, and it's people internal to Ubisoft. So who knows what it's actually called. Anyway, I think Microsoft is the one that's going to be purchasing it after Bethesda. So, we'll be watching to see. I'm not quite sure. I think that's what it was. Guess we'll see. But it's all these mergers and acquisitions, right? And what's going to end up happening is all of the people who are, oh, you do. I don't know. You're going to have to do some due diligence there, Brill. And make that decision all on your own. So got like four more articles, something like that. Yeah. So let's get through this. The next article is over in Warcrafters only because it's from the source PC Gamer, and a lot of my articles from PC Gamer get thrown into the Warcrafters channel. The first SSDs to run at ultra rapid 13,000 megabytes per second. breaks surface at Computex. The first PCIe 5 drives aren't expected until AMD's Zen 4 processors later this year. I spoke about it yesterday, maybe the day before, but we don't have to wait that long to find out about the next generation of speedy PC storage. Over at its virtual Computex booth, Apacer, has revealed the first PCIe Gen 5 SSDs running at up to 13,000 megabytes per second read speeds. So that's like twice the speed of current M.2 drives. The higher end M.2 drives are around 6,000. This is going to be amazing, amazing. But I think with this switch, you're going to need, well, you're definitely going to need a new motherboard. You're probably going to need DDR5 RAM. And these speeds are going to be heat generators, the likes of which you could probably, everything that's in my office is liquid cooled and it still gets warm in here. I can't imagine an SSD running at those speeds and still staying cool. So let's see what it says. Oh, look, it even references it. There you go. Apacer and Zadek, SSDs feature the same heat sink from the images in their virtual Computex booth, but the Zadek model, is listed with an ultra-thin graphene heat sink. Yeah, there you go. There's some marketing lingo. I'm more inclined nowadays. I think I'm going to, if I do this, I'm going to end up hunting down some liquid coolers that fit on these. I think are probably going to be M.2s. And let's see. Let's click the link and take us over to PC Gamer. Yeah. Figured that they would be that style. So these aren't your normal SSDs, right? When most people think of SSDs, they think of the, you know, 2.5 inch or 3.5 inch drives or sitting in a caddy or something like that. But that's not what these are. These are M.2 drives, essentially M.2 drives. But PCIe 5 speeds. So completely different in terms of what they will plug into and how they operate. So you're going to have to get something new. And it even says the first PCIe 5 drives aren't expected until AMD Zen 4. Different architecture, so we're all going to have to upgrade, right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And I think it was yesterday. Time flies. But I'm planning on getting a new AMD-only system just because at one point in my life, I actually was really into AMD more than Intel. But AMT is a heat generator, the likes of which, historically at least, the likes of which would, you know, start forest fires. That's a joke. Don't come after me, AMD. So it says, we don't know yet how much cooling a PCIe. See, we're all on the same page. But Phison has said it reckons its E26 controller will actually run cooler than some around today. Yeah, I doubt it. That said, it also mentioned active cooling could one day become the norm for M.2 SSDs. Ta-da! Pretty neat stuff there, folks. And at 13 gigs, this is going to be amazing. Because right now it takes forever for me to move large files from one place to another. But at that speed, not only can I keep my house warm in winter, but I can also move it really fast. Let's continue on to the next article. This is in the Mobile Channel. And it says, why has CPI inflation calculation changed over time? As prices soar, some critics are raising doubts about the official inflation figures. I'm one of them. But many economists say the figures are an accurate snapshot of rising prices. No. this is an article over at New York Times. Not all of it applies to everybody around the world, but we're all looking at rising prices. And I spoke about it a couple of days ago that when you go to business school, you're told that the stock market is designed so that it levels the highs and lows and everything becomes less erratic. And well, that's complete bunk because I went and looked at the price of oil, which is has futures trading, right? It's a commodity and it's sold far in advance. And when you're looking at the chart of its history for crude oil, you're seeing wild fluctuations ever since OPEC was created. And investors got a hold of the ability to sell the future value of what's being pulled out of the ground. And so there has got to be, it's the reason why I got out of global finance. There's got to be something more to this than just regular price, supply and demand and whatever, because up until the mid 1960s, oil prices were sub $25 a barrel. Then OPEC formed in 1960, and within a decade, everything had congealed around to the point that oil prices skyrocketed to $130 within 10 years of OPEC forming. So the moment that investors got a hold of the ability to make massive profits, that's when volatility came to oil. Fascinating when you look at the chart and then you get told in business school that, well, the stock market is supposed to balance those highs and lows. No. That's not what happened. Then I look at the price of oil and I look at the price of wheat, because wheat prices and prices for food pretty much have gone through the roof here in the States and elsewhere. And I see almost dead on, well, not almost, it is dead on the same. The price for oil and the price for wheat are matched. Every spike that wheat has is the same spike that oil has. So it's one and the same. It's gas prices, actually. Slightly different, same source. So why has the inflation calculation changed over time? Let's find out. Let's see what they say. This article is over at New York Times by Stuart A. Thompson and Jenna Smialik. Maybe it's Smialik. I don't know. I'm ruining names. So, Brill, you said one of your PCs had DDR5 RAM, but the other, or has, right? Yeah. But the other would need massive updates. So you must have recently gotten a PC, huh? I'm a little jealous. That's okay. Where's that ban button? Oh, gosh. Okay, I can't find it. Otherwise, there's dead air here. Okay, whatever. I'm just kidding, bro. Don't run off. Stick around. Consumer prices are increasing at the fastest clip in 40 years, climbing 8.3% in April compared to a year earlier. Yeah, pretty high compared to a month earlier, too. As popular anger about the rising costs mount, a chorus of critics have been arguing that the sky-high inflation figures are actually being undercounted. I agree. In YouTube videos, on conservative talk shows, and in posts by financial analysts, the critics argue, why did they just limit it to conservative talk shows? I'm not a conservative, and I say the same thing, but I guess I'm fall into that other category, right, of financial analysts? I suppose so. The critics argue that over the past several decades, economists have tweaked one of the government's standard measures of inflation. I say the same thing happens with a lot of other public numbers. Depending on what the messaging is, you tweak it a little bit so that it, you know, makes better sense. You know, I'm not really a big fan of being lumped into the same category as Tucker Carlson, not by any stretch. I'll leave my opinion out of this, but anyway, I know for a fact that historical numbers have changed because I can't give too much away, but you know, GDP has changed over time. The percentage of change from one year to another, one month to another has changed historically because there is other information or something else has changed. Why does it change? Why isn't there a documented statement as to why it changed? Well, sometimes the messaging doesn't align. And again, I am far from being conservative, far. But I am open to discussion about it. So it says here, change number one, inflation doesn't include house prices. That is not, that has nothing to do with it. So it says, people who are skeptical about America's inflation often cite a change in how home costs are measured in the Consumer Price Index, a closely watched metric produced by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. In 1983, the government switched from using home prices. Nobody is saying that inflation is using house prices, but house prices skyrocketed in the last 2 years. Let's see what else. I'm going to keep on scrolling. So let's see here. There's a whole lot in this, and it talks about CPI compared with houses and whatnot. Change number two, economists swap expensive products for cheaper ones. Well, no. They began to update the basket more regularly about 20 years ago. Right? Okay, so what are you getting on here? The basket is supposed to match what the trends are for home buyer. The producer. How do I say it? The basket changes on what people are buying for about 1,000 homes. It's not a massive number, and there's a few, and there are a few other. They get the numbers from companies as well that produce the goods, shops, grocery stores, etc. So yeah, it changes to reflect, yeah, right there, what people actually spend their money on. Okay, but that doesn't change the skyrocketing CPI in the last 2 years. And in the last 4 months, it's been going, accelerating dramatically faster compared to what it has been historically. Historically, it's been 3, maybe 6 points in a year. Now it's done 6 points. It's actually done, the biggest jump that I've seen is in the last 2 months, where the CPI has increased something like 12 points. Oh, sorry, it jumped. So it says one inflation calculation called chain CPI measures how prices change if consumers swap expensive products for cheaper substitutions, even if they're in different categories. And chain CPI tends to lower the regular CPI. So this doesn't really give me much here. I'm going to have to go and look at current trends. I can't really, I don't really like doing it live, only because it's kind of dead air. And I don't want to edit this at the end. At any rate, something that is a percent doesn't really indicate enough fidelity there, because 10% of 10 is 1, but 10% of 100, slightly different number, right? Okay, so let's go on to the next article. And we need greater context. So I'll look into it. Maybe we can talk about it tomorrow if one of the articles mentions this. I'll be cognizant of it when I'm going through the news. I typically just grab what I think is interesting at the time. But let's see. This next article is in the Smack Talk channel, and that's about Apple and competitors, but basically in the framework of the Apple ecosystem. It says the 5 best digital art apps for iPad artists. Just going to click the link and take us over to Apple Insider. The article's by Amber Neely. There's a rumor that there's a new Apple Pencil coming. If you're an artist, it's supposed to have greater touch sensitivity, touch options. But I don't know. That's rumor is rumor. But let's see what they say for artists, apps for artists. Procreate is kind of a standard for artists. I would say you just can't go wrong with Procreate. its feature set, its functions, the ability to export, it's raster based. It just allows you to do so much. And I don't think that it's always been $10, but apparently it's $10 on the App Store. And let's see. Oh, and there apparently there's an iPhone exclusive version of Procreate called Procreate Pocket, which I've never even looked at. Yeah, I don't remember. So really, you said that you thought it was free. I don't recall it. When I got it, it was a long time ago. It like just dropped. And so I don't even recall it being, I don't recall it being $10. I thought you could buy something internally, but anyway, it's been so long since I actually looked at the original price of it. So maybe it was only, maybe it's always been $10. Adobe Fresco. I don't recall ever using it. It says if you've already got an Adobe subscription, pardon me, check out Adobe Fresco. Everything from Adobe costs money. You can subscribe, and then it might make sense. And if you can get away with being a student, it makes it cheaper. And you can also get like subversions of it. But once you have a subscription, you can pretty much use all of their applications. But I don't think I've ever bothered with anything on any a tablet or a phone that is Adobe. Desktop, yes, but not mobile. I'll stick to Procreate. Clip Studio Paint, I've never used it, but it looks nice. Looks like a Photoshop interface style kind of a thing. Looks pretty neat. And Affinity Designer is one that I've got as well. I always check out apps, and Affinity Designer is great. Yeah, so Brildane, you said that you hate subscriptions and that if you can purchase that, you will. So back in the day, yo, and you may know this, but others may have forgotten this over the years or have never even heard of this, but it used to cost you thousands of dollars to own Adobe products, and you would buy them all at once, right? You'd buy one thing or Creative Suite all at once, and it would be like $1,400. Unless you were a student or an instructor. So when I was a student, I've purchased two versions of Adobe Creative Suite. Now, this is way back in the Wayback Machine. And nowadays, it costs you somewhere around $30, $40, $50. It really depends on which plan you get and where you come in. Again, there are instructor/student and other deals. But when they released a new version and they stopped updating the previous version, you were basically done and you had to use whatever offer was there. And yeah, it was really expensive because it was deemed a commercial and they had the market cornered in terms of corporate use, enterprise use. So if you were going to do anything, it was going to be in Adobe. Well, now you have the tech and brilliant software engineers doing things like Procreate and Affinity Designer, and you're getting the same functionality almost. The more modern versions of Adobe are very advanced. But some of the stuff, like the 3D stuff that's in Adobe, is now being phased out. But there are other solutions for that, but I digress. Anyway, Affinity Designer and Procreate are brilliant. I've got Sketchbook. That's another one. If you ever want to do something that's really fast and easy, then Sketchbook is where it's at. And I've got others, but you know, I use a lot of different note apps because I like just having a change of interface. And then I can try to export from one to another, but it's never necessarily going to work out right. But this is a neat article, and you can find out more about it if you follow the show notes. You can go over and check out a little bit more about the 5 best digital art apps for iPad artists by Amber Neely over at Apple Insider. And I have one more article, and that is the SteelSeries Arctis Nova Pro Review. So it's a wireless gaming headset that comes in a completely new design, apparently. And it's expensive. So let's just go over to the article. It's over at PC Gamer. It is, written by Katie Wickens. And it's the SteelSeries Arctis Nova Pro. So what they write is that it has a really good bass, apparently, really good audio quality. It's intuitive and informative. New sonar parametric EQ. That's interesting. They say it's comfortable, light, highly adjustable. Pardon me, I got something in my eye. And the digital analog converter is an amp and fast charging spare battery dock. That's interesting. And it has noise cancellation for the mic and rear cups. All right. So they're also, they say against is can only skip or pause music with headset buttons over Bluetooth. Okay. They're wireless, right? Isn't that? Okay. Frightfully loud glitch noises when going out of range. That's pretty typical for anything going out of range. Maybe that's just me, but I've had that happen. In fact, I have... Let me see if I can grab them real quick. This might, because I pulled them off of my computer, it might actually break them. Hold on a second. So I have these things. They're called Neura headphones. They're semi-wireless, right? They're tethered to each other. And they do this miraculous modification based on the acoustics of your ear. Anyway, these things are, they don't treat me well when I get out of range. Pardon me while I do some weird plugging things back into my computer. Anyway, they really don't treat me well when I go out of range. And they make that weird glitching thing. But these things are very expensive for what they are. Like wildly expensive. And then I have these JLab, which are like $20 over-ear headphones. They're only $20 and they're from JLabs.com, I think it is, JLabs. Just do a search for JLabs and you'll pull them up. And they're great. They last like 32 hours. They don't have a really big dynamic range, right? So the audio isn't spectacular, but they don't do this glitchy noise thing. They are rock solid in how long they last. I can go 3 days, so close to 24 hours without even caring to charge them up, but they give you an audio warning, basically saying when you turn them on, low battery. So, Brill, you said you have the Rode Buds. And they also have a set of LG 930 wireless. Yeah. I always have a problem with the big cans. Sorry, I don't know why I said it like that. Big headphones. I don't know why. I just don't want... They have a video, by the way. So if you go over to PCGamer.com and check it out, is my show really almost 2 hours long so far? Okay. Anyway, this is amazing because it has a reloadable lithium battery. So you can just pop out a battery and put another one in. Okay, Brildane, you're taking off. Have fun. Oh my gosh, really? Oh no, I don't know if you want to do that. I'm actually done. I'm done with the show. This is my last article. I used to have the Razer Black Widow Chromas, by the way. Those were really good. But they were good up until a certain level, and then they started, the quality broke down. But these are huge. These things are just massive. The padding that's on them, you take care, Brildane. And thank you for stopping by. I really appreciate it. I'll miss you. Bye. So it says, sadly, my friends could hear me blasting the sacred 10-hour Wii music loop with the mic fully retracted, although the fact it sits flush within the ear cup means they look much less like a flight controller than they would if they were wearing the Razer Kraken X, which, by the way, is another one that I had. See you soon, bro. Okay, well, you'll have to go over and check out this very in-depth review. The best thing about it is that it's USB-C. But it says it has a battery life of 30 hours and an easily replaceable battery. So this is all kinds of awesome. And it works with 2.4 Wi-Fi. Wow. But at $350, is it worth it? I don't know. So maybe they need to send it to me and I can evaluate it and talk to you in real time about it. You know, because I'm a subject matter expert on headphones. I'm not. But I'm willing to give it the hometown try. Da-da. At any rate, so I don't turn this into a two-hour show, I'm going to bow out. But before I do that, at the beginning and the end of every show, hopefully I don't break this because I've been doing some big changes in the back of Ohmtown. Go over to ohmtown.com, sign up, become a citizen. Come back and talk shop with me about the news over the last 24 hours. I do the show every day so far without any issues. Other than I have to bounce around which time zone I'm actually going to be appealing to. Because right now is not the prime time for when I would be doing this. I'm trying to do it at 11 o'clock, and then I'm going to start streaming other things, games, and maybe talking about the news as I play the game. Whatever the game or whatever talking or whatever, I'm just going to be on and just being Marowat here at Ohmtown on Twitch. Sound good? Okay. Thanks for coming. If you're in my chat, thank you very much. Be sure to follow. Go warn people. Hey, go over to Ohmtown and hang out with him because he's getting lonely. Okay. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.